What is up, Asymmetry? How you all doing? Well, listen, it's been a hot minute since we've sat down with Eli Atkins from Waldo Street Pottery, and my goodness, what a difference a day makes. We had no idea, and Eli had no idea, the last time we sat down with him in the infamous Popcorn Tin podcast, that he was dealing with unknown challenges and influences in his life. And to see where he is today compared to that last conversation we had, and to hear just the incredible evolution of his mentality and approach, I can only say, man, sometimes things just work out for the better. And it was really nice. Eli.
Ryan.
What's going on, dude?
Oh, you know, life is.
Oh my gosh. Are you in the African savannah? Is that what I'm seeing behind you?
Yes, I am.
Gosh. Bonsai ceramics.
I mean, please let me know.
Yeah, that's right. I'll let you know before the lion gets
here. Just stand up and point and have the horrified look on your face. That'd be good.
Yeah, I might freeze in fear, but I'll do my very best to stay alert and aware. There is a giraffe eating trees behind you, which is pretty radical. I'm into this. Yeah, I see this. It's like safari tent vibe.
Is that where flat top acacia comes from? The giraffe's eating from the top down, I guess?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Either the giraffe's eating them, or, you know, some sort of adaptation to not get high enough for the giraffes to chew on, one or the other.
Right. Right. Man, thanks so much for having me again. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for wanting to come back. It sounds like you are up to a lot. Life is evolving.
Yeah, it is. Let me tell you about it. It is just moving at a pace, you know?
Well, last time we talked, you were getting ready to go on tour with the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. New Kids.
Oh, the New Kids on the Block. How did that go?
Not very well. Not very well, which led to a lot of other things. I could not really perform the job the way that I was normally performing the job. I could not be the person that I normally am due to things that I did not know were happening. You know, it turns out a couple of brain tumors later, you realize things, why things are going the way they are. And I don't know, it's been a wild ride.
Wow. So tell me about this. You had brain tumors?
Yeah, two of them.
Oh my gosh. And how did this impact you?
Well, it just, cognitive ability just started declining in a rapid pace. You know, they say these things are very slow growing. They're benign, thank God. But they grew very slowly. And then once they get to a certain point, they're putting some pressure on your brain that starts causing you to have difficulties. I mean, it started with forgetfulness. And by the, you know, over a 5-year span, I think by the end of it, I could barely walk 10 feet without falling. It was just really strange. I really, you know, thought I was having early onset Alzheimer's or something. And, you know, to go finally see a neurologist and have a diagnosis that really gives you a lot of freedom, releases so much pressure to know that there is a reason for these things going on. It's just been a wild ride. And then you have to go in and have these things surgically removed, which I've done twice over the last 6 months. I guess last June was the first one, and then December was the second one. And life has just changed immensely since then. I'm just back to feeling normal. I've lost a lot of weight and I just feel great.
Wow. What was the recovery for the surgery like?
I'm still in it for the second surgery. I mean, it's been, you know, it was 3 weeks out of the studio for each time. So it's been 6 weeks out of the studio, which I've just been chomping at the bit, you know, to get back in. And then when I did, the drive has just been unbelievable. I think I've still got a couple more months to really get back settled. The first one took about 6 months. This one's going to take about the same amount of time. So I've got a few more months. This trip's going to help a lot, I think, you know, just get resettled into life.
And what is that like resettling like for something this significant? Like, do you still not feel 100%? Is there like cognitive dissonance to a degree?
I think to a small degree, but it gets better as we go. So I'm feeling every day I feel a little bit better. And the drive, I think, is everything is just new, really. It's new again. If you know what I mean, it's just my drive to work is there. I just got to get, I just can't go back out on the road and handle millions of somebody's dollars and be speculative at all. Mm-hmm. I got to be confident. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So are you hoping to go back on the road and resume your audio engineering?
I'm going to do that if that's what it takes to do, but I'm not 100% on that right now.
Uh-huh.
We'll see.
So this kind of is leading to a fairly significant sort of lifestyle change for you then.
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, 99% change, I would say.
Wow.
Lots changing. It feels good. I'm happy. You know, I was really just down. It was causing a lot of like just mental anxiety to go through that. And now I just feel so much better. I'm awake every day and in the studio before the sun comes up, here until the sun goes down. It's just that I just feel good. I just got to get myself back in the right place to really go back to a real work. Unless this becomes the real work, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So is there a chance that this becomes a consistent thing? Like once you have benign tumors that have grown in your brain, does this for some people become a like chronic issue?
I mean, there's like three types of these tumors. They're called meningiomas. And, you know, the one type is this good. Once they take it out, it's gone. The second type is like there's a chance it could grow again. The third type, it probably will grow. And I had one that's not going to grow back and one that has a potential to possibly grow back. So we're just going to keep an eye on it and just keep on moving.
And so I'm sorry to interrupt. So this not only was causing like, it was not only causing like a physical limitation to walking coordination and fine motor skills, it was also causing like a mood, lack of motivation, sort of fatigue. And I heard you say anxiety. And you didn't know where that anxiety was coming from. It was just there.
I did not. It was just there. Yeah. You know, it was bad. I mean, I've, you know, been passionate about bonsai for a very long time. Half my trees are gone from that experience. Very upsetting, you know, to have walk out one day and there's just ghosts everywhere.
Right.
But now I'm back feeling good, back into my trees, had a really good repotting season and just feeling good about things again.
That's awesome. Unfortunately, obviously, for different reasons, I totally relate to this, like working on trees for a long time and suddenly, you know, they're gone, sort of taken, right. taken yeah. from you almost without your control. I'm really sorry that you went through that.
It takes an emotional toll, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw the horror movie that you're talking about. It made me fearful a little bit. I'm not into horror, but that was a wild ride there too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's been a process of recovery as well in a different way. Yeah. Totally non-comparable though.
Yeah, but everything that everybody has is all only relative to ourselves. Nothing's going to be put on us that we can't handle. It's all just relative.
Yeah. Are you a man of faith?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah.
Even more so now than ever.
Yeah. Nothing gets put on you that you can't handle. That's what my grandma used to tell me that. And I still carry that one with me because there are an awful lot of challenges that feel like you want to opt out.
Right. But we just got to, you know, hold fast and keep moving.
Yeah. So it sounds like this year is kind of the first repotting season that you've had where you felt, I mean, when did these tumors come out again? When was the last one taken out?
The last one was taken out on my birthday on December 13th last year.
Okay.
Yeah. It'd be big birthday.
Yeah, big birthday. Interesting that you scheduled it on your birthday. A really great birthday present. So this is the first spring where you're like, I'm back, baby. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. And like I say, I'm just as driven as I could be to produce and be happy.
Now, is this, I mean, do you feel like it's a little bit of a slingshot effect from being so debilitated for so long? Or do you feel like this is where you have been assumed you would be, and there was just this slow, insidious creep away from the Eli that you knew?
I think it's kind of a combination of both. I've always been driven to do good at whatever it was I was choosing to do. And also it was a slow climb back. But once I just couldn't believe the difference just after the first surgery, you know, which was diagnosed as a tumor the size of a peach.
Oh my gosh.
And by the time they took it out, it was the size of a softball. So of course it was doing some damage and causing the disability that it was. But I don't know, it just feels great to be back and feeling good and feeling right.
And this is a slow growing tumor. So like the progression of this, looking back, are you able to see that this was impacting you for several years, or was this just impacting you for several months when it hit that critical mass?
I think it was several years, but because they're so slow growing, you know, the beginning was just I was just being forgetful. I was forgetting this and I was forgetting that. And I was leaving my keys somewhere, never finding them. Or I think over the course of a year, I lost 5 wallets, driver's licenses, passports, all kinds of things, you know. It was just again, the ride has been wild.
Yeah. And what did your loved ones say once there was like a definitive understanding of what was causing that? Or were they aware of this sort of creep as well? Were they seeing it and concerned about it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like the even at the Nationals in 2018, some close friends up there were like, "Are you okay?" You know, and I knew nothing of it at that time. But even that far back, it was, you know, becoming obvious.
Were you kind of like, why is everybody asking me if I was okay? Like, or were you like,
because I knew something wasn't right. You know, it just took a long time for it to really settle in and get there.
Wow. God, I am so happy that you figured it out and that you're okay. Like, wow, what a thing to come through.
Yeah. Let me tell you, life is good. God is good.
Whew. Wow. Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, it's so interesting.
Yeah. I mean, think back to the podcast, the popcorn and all that stuff. You know, that was just all relative to the situation, I think, at the time.
Yeah, legendary podcast. I mean, legendary podcast. Like, I think people are going to be so psyched to hear that you've come through that storm, because that's a big storm to weather. But yeah, and you know, I think like even if it was just like comedic relief because of anxiety with the podcast, which happens periodically, like totally understandable.
Sure. Right.
But it does, you know, it does explain a lot. And I also, you know, like we talked in the last podcast about just sort of like the passing of the torch from Ron Lang to you with, you know, his killing and stuff, and there was some pressure and expectation there. And you know, I thought about it after our podcast and just like felt a little bit like I kind of put that on you. And I really felt bad about that, because the last thing that you want to do to somebody who's creative is to create some sort of sense of pressure. But, you know, it also has to be asked, because they're, you know, Ron and Sharon obviously created such a significant footprint on the Bonsai Ceramics in North America.
And
they both just, you know, love you dearly. And so there is that connection that's kind of undeniable. But also, you know, Ron said, listen, as far as talented individuals, Eli's got it. And I want to see what he's capable of. And so like it was a real intentional passing of the torch. That, yeah, it's great that you were able to identify and get some relief from what you were dealing with. So what does ceramics look like now? I mean, you're talking about everything kind of getting better, but like, let's focus on your ceramics. What does that look like?
It was a little bit of an adjustment to come back, but the drive has been there. And just like every time I do any show, it's like this. I produce a ton of work to go do three shows in a short amount of time. I see some things that are good. I see some things that to be improved on. But every time I do a show, I say, I wish I could take the pots I'm making now. The ones that are going to be left behind on the shelf that are drying, that don't make it to the shows, those are the ones I'm the most proud of. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just progression and I don't know, familiarity and consistency, really. Staying consistent really just advances the game, I think.
Yeah. So is there an opening of the door creatively with this sort of relief and the tumors being removed, or did it not really impact you creatively?
I think it freed me up to be creative, and that's the biggest impact that it had.
You gotcha. Know,
because again, it was just debilitating. It was just holding me back from everything. Mm-hmm. And even the building of the studio, I was under the influence of these tumors, and that was a difficult time, contractors and the whatnot. But I think it's just, the creativity was opened back up in a great way, and the drive was installed deeply.
Yeah, I mean, creativity is so impinged by stress and anxiety and stuff like that. It's like you really can't be your creative self if you've got all that mental weight. So that makes total sense. And then as far as like the technical components of Bonsai Ceramics, it's like, now you're back in the game of, I guess, you know, continuing the daily pursuit and the refinement of your technique and craft and stuff. Anything that you're specifically focused on?
I'm focused on right now is there's really the confidence that comes with the consistency. You know, I'm not afraid to try things. You know, I've been pretty good at going wide. I've not been that good at going tall. So I'm trying to work on tall and wide, you know. Uh-huh. Both things at once, and contrasting shapes. I'm working on the squared circle things again. I had those a good bit back around 2018, and then I sort of left them behind. And now I'm sort of just exploring that again, that push and pull effect of two shapes in one kind of thing.
Yeah, interesting. And I mean, you were working with Preston and another ceramicist kind of on some collaborative projects. Yeah, how's that going?
We haven't done it again, but we all want to, and we just have to make the time for it. You know, we're all very much in contact and sharing information and helping one another out. And it's really a great thing.
Yeah.
Those guys are so talented. It's unbelievable. And making such great work too. It's great to be in cahoots with people like that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Iron sharpens iron as far as the craft and art of the whole thing. And I mean, I saw Preston Tolbert's work like one time long ago, and I haven't really seen it again in the Bonsai sphere, but his knowledge and ability to wood fire, he was able to elicit a lot of really interesting aesthetics out of his pots. And I've long hoped that he would either contact me again because it came out of the blue, you know, or...
Right. He's still doing it. And, you know, but he's busy also with other things. He's a kiln builder, and he's building kilns all over North Carolina, all over the Southeast, really. So he's building onagamas, and he's building wood kilns and soda kilns and all kinds of things. So he's really busy with that. And Rob is busy making really large containers. You know, he's been very good at it. His container, his work is really beautiful. And he's just gotten a new kiln where he can even go bigger. Mm-hmm. So he's working on that aspect now.
Well, would you consider North Carolina to be a ceramic hotbed on the East Coast?
It's a mecca.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a mecca.
Is it a mecca in North America, or is it more like a regional mecca? Because I don't understand these aspects of ceramics.
It's just that the history there is so long and so deep that it's just in the blood. It's in the bloodline there, you know. It's just the Catawba Valley and all these places. There's so much great stuff going on there all the time. Not mostly bonsai, but you know there are a few bonsai people there.
What makes a place become a ceramic mecca? Is there a local regional clay that like has been like what makes a place?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the history is first and foremost, and then North Carolina does have a number of clay manufacturers who are making good stuff that have used extensively over the years.
And for your clays that you use in your operation, are these locally sourced? Are these custom blends, or are these off the shelf clays? Which is not to cheapen them. I mean, off the shelf clay is off the shelf clay because it's a good mixture, right? So, like, how do you handle your clay body?
Right now, what I'm doing is I have a lot of reclaimed clay, things that scrap I've saved over the years, and I still buy some commercial clay and blend it together in the mixer I got from Ron and the plug mill that I got. Also, I mix it up together and gives me something that I'm really enjoying, but I'm really looking forward to moving into making the Ron Lang clay mix. That's on the horizon. And it has been for quite a while, but now that I'm back and recovering and all that stuff, you know, once you get to that point, the stuff I had to make up for so much stuff that it just takes time to get caught back up. Now I'm finally getting to where I see that on the horizon is coming to be able to work in that clay again. I took a break after the first surgery in June. In October, I went out to Montana for 3 weeks and did an artist residency out there. And I didn't even realize it, but I had all these bags of clay that Ron had mixed in my shed. And I went in and found them, took them all out to Montana, and that's all I used out there. And it was so wonderful to work with. So I look forward to getting back to that and using that extensively again. Well, almost primarily, probably.
Wow. And you cut out right as you said where you did the artist residency. It was in Montana?
Yeah, at Red Lodge Clay Center in Red Lodge, Montana.
Oh, wow. For 3 weeks, you were there doing an artist residency.
Yeah, I was supposed to be there for two, and then I was going to go home after the two and got snowed in. I couldn't leave for another week, so it just made sense to stay. Yeah, it was great. That turned into, like, really my first ever solo mission firing a gas kiln. And not only that, but firing the biggest pot I'd ever made at that point, which was 27-inch oval, and I had no idea. It was like a giraffe on roller skates trying to fire that kiln. I had no idea what I was doing, freaking out, and everything turned out great. I did everything wrong and everything turned out great.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Holy cow. Fate smiling at you a little bit there.
It really did. It really did. It set me up for the future, I hope.
Wow. Wow. So was the work different being in this artist retreat? I mean, isn't that kind of the purpose of an artist retreat, is to be inspired by a different space?
I think so. Different space, different people, different environment. You know what I mean? I mean, every day I would take a walk. I mean, this place was in a small town, wonderful, quaint small town, but it was 6 miles out of town. So I would just take a break at lunch every day, walk down to the creek, see the mountains, see the, you know, the wildlife, everything that was there. And it just really was just a great place to be. Just the experience as a whole was unbelievable.
Yeah.
The facility was unbelievable. Very well done. So it was all an inspiration.
And how many, were there other artists that were doing a retreat at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had long-term residents and short-term, and there were three or four of the people in the room that I was in working on different things, you know, abstract things, standard mug things, and then one person making really big sculptures.
Wow.
So it was very, very interesting and inspiring to see it all.
And nobody's telling you how or what to do. You're just there to do what you're there to do.
Right.
And does this facility offer like a scholarship to do this, or is it like an invitation? How does it work?
I think some people get, you know, there was one person in the room that got a grant from somewhere to be there. And I think they do offer some things like that, but it wasn't like that for me, which was okay. I just had another friend that was a local potter who had done it and said, you'll love this, go try it. So I just, you know, it was just my chance to get out after the surgery and live life a little bit and try to expand the craft in one swoop, you know?
Wow. 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 Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. What a journey. Shoo.
It really was great.
Yeah.
This one, you know, what's coming up is these three shows, and that's my break after this, the second surgery. It's my chance to get out, live life, and expand the craft to some degree.
Yeah. And what are these three shows that you're talking about?
I'm going to be taking 3 weeks to go to three big shows in the country, starting with the Houston, Texas. The BCI and the Lone Star Federation are doing Bonsai on the Bayou, and that is April 25th through the 28th at the Marriott West Chase in Houston. Mm-hmm. That's going to have Bjorn, Sergio, Min, and Sean Smith all as the headliners at that show. Should be very interesting. Should be a really good show. I've not been to Texas, so I'm really excited to expand the brand westward that far, at least. So I've been to, you know, St. Louis is the farthest that I've been west, so I'm looking forward to trying to prove more ground.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Eli, go west, sir. Go west. Wow. Cool.
Go west and win. Yeah. So following that, that is the first last weekend of April. I'll drive from there, from Houston to St. Louis for the big Bonsai Central show they have there. I listened to the podcast this week, those fellows with Jonas, and very inspired by their drive and their passion to do this show. And the show's going to be very big, and I think it's going to be great. The 2018 show there was really great, and I think this one should be too.
Mm, cool.
Yeah. Lots of vendors, lots of great trees. Headliners at this show are Bjorn, Tyler, Maria from Croatia, Andrew Robson, Young, and Mara from Italy. So I think it's going to be a kind of a big deal.
That's a monstrosity of a headliner crew right there.
It really is. And it's going to be a monstrosity of vendors too. I believe there's 8 potters there.
No kidding. Good golly. And when is that?
That one is this first weekend of May, which is May 3rd through the 5th.
Gotcha.
And that is at the Gateway Convention Center across the river from St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois.
Wow. Wow, wow. And that's kind of like, correct me if I'm wrong, I've read a little bit about it. It's kind of like a national show-esque kind of scale that they're trying to do there. Am I understanding that correctly?
It is. That's what I understood from the podcast. And even, you know, the 2018 one was an ABS collaboration show, which made it pretty big too. And they're just trying to, I think, follow up with that on a real big scale.
So it's been 7 years, 7 years since their first show.
Right.
Yeah, man, it's tough.
Since that show. I don't know what they've done since then, but they did mention in the podcast, that's what they're trying to follow up on, is that big show. And again, the drive and the passion I heard in that podcast is really inspiring to me to be there as well.
Yeah, and this is on the Bonsai Time podcast. Is that what you're talking about?
Bonsai Wire.
Bonsai Wire. Right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Yeah, more Bonsai podcasts out there, huh?
Yeah, and I've never been big on podcasts, but that's what I'm listening to. I'm listening to podcasts now about bonsai and ones about creativity too. Those are inspiring for me to listen to. So I like that stuff.
Yeah, me too. I like
your
listening.
Podcast is great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, hey, yeah, no, I think. The podcast is one of my favorite things that we do, and we have, it's been this like very organic thing. I have to be really mm-hmm. honest, like I have a lot of creative ambitions I want to put into the podcast, but we've been building an app for so freaking long that it feels like it's taken over my life, and continuing to try and just like get all across all the hurdles of modern tech and dealing with the changing environment of how all of these platforms and information ties together. And it's been like a total lesson in the changing of the tides, you know, because there for a long time, right. You know, information right. was freely exchanged and now it's not.
Right.
So what's the third show?
The third show, I will drive from St. Louis up to Grand Rapids for the, it's an ABS tying in with the Michigan All-State Bonsai Society to do Bonsai in the Garden at, that is May 9th through the 12th at Frederick Meyer Gardens and Sculpture Park in Grand Rapids, with headliners of Hugo Zamora, Jack Sustick, Sue Tin, and as other artists will be Steve Jetzer, Mark Fields, Curtis Smith, Matt Spinnikin, and Tim Priest. That is a free show to observers. You have to register to do workshops and things like that.
Wow.
That's, again, a new market for me. I've never been that far north, so it's exciting. I've been to Rochester. I guess that might be equivalent.
But, yeah, right. So Midwest, at least. How do you handle this? Like, do you have a body of work for each show? Or do you go to Texas and then take what doesn't sell in Texas to St. Louis and then sort of take what doesn't sell to Michigan? Like, how do you handle this? Because I know...
Man, that's such a great question. Yeah. If you have any answers, please let me know. I've set a goal for a number of pots, right? And I got fairly close. And I'm just going to... I don't really know how to do it. I've got boxes packed. Some boxes have random things in it. One box has all the trays. One box has slabs, you know, so it's just going to be... grab and go, I think, and see how it goes.
I mean, here's what I would tell you. If I were a consumer, I would want to know that you've set aside special pieces for each show that,
right.
You know, because you as a ceramicist have work that you love that you know may or may not sell, and then you have work that you feel good about and know will be an absolute banger no matter where you go. And, right. Yeah, that kind of a tour is so interesting because you do have to kind of organize things appropriately. But then as a, you know, let's just switch hats here for a minute. As a ceramicist making a living and as a business person, you don't want to take pots off the table in tech that would sell in Texas to save them for St. Louis and Michigan. Right. And all of a sudden that gets really complex. Right. So I think, right. You know, that's going to be interesting to hear how you handle it and, you know, to see how the reception to your pots are in these areas that maybe have not had exposure to your work.
Right. I think I've got a one box with like all the Shoheen pieces. I think that'll go in to the show, and what doesn't sell will go to the next show. The same thing with the trays. The same, and I've got a, you know, a couple of boxes of large pots and a couple of like really, you know, two of the bigger pieces, you know. I don't, they'll just go into all the shows, and then I'll take the random boxes in to fill in gaps around this and see how it all goes. And I've never really worked in Potter's Call production mode. So I tried that this time where I tried to choose three of the same size bats to put on the wheel, three of the same weights of clay, and throw three pots that are not the same, but they're at least the same in weight and size. And then use a similar, you know, the same glaze combination, but in a different way for each one, because I never want to produce the same pot twice. So I did try to work in production mode that way. So, and split those between the boxes, you know, those three pots. So if I pick a random pot, I think it's going to be fairly balanced for each step. And if I have to pull another box out, I'm going to pull another box out. I'm not there to take all the pots home, you know.
What happens if you go to Texas and sell all your pots?
Then if that happens, I might stay on vacation and go to the other shows and have a good time.
Yeah.
Less pressure, right?
Yeah, right.
Less pressure.
So that's best case scenario. And you'd say, well, Texas is a good market.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited to go out there. I don't know very many of the people, but talk to a few of them. I'm excited. It's going to be a good time, I think.
Yeah. Where did you say that was again? Houston?
Houston. Yeah.
God, you got to go get some of that Pinkerton barbecue when you're there. I'm just telling you, it is legit.
Yeah, I'll try it. Try it. Not much of a pork man, but they got the good chicken. I'll eat that all day.
Oh, they got chicken. And you know what it is? They have some ridiculous, although, you know, sausage, still pork, but like pork with a, you know, jalapeno cheese sausage at Pinkerton is ridiculous. Anyways, whenever I go to Texas, I try to focus on barbecue for like probably, oh, I would say, it was a fairly devoted dedication to barbecue across North America when I was traveling for the first 3 years coming back from Japan. Anywhere I could possibly try barbecue, I did. And Texas is definitely a mecca of barbecue.
There's a Texas barbecue here in Atlanta that I've known for a long time, and one of the top in there, like barbecue in Atlanta, which is great. Fox Brothers, if you ever come back here, try it out.
So take me back to this. You're saying there's a famous barbecue spot in Atlanta.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Brothers Barbecue.
Brothers Barbecue.
Fox Brothers. Yeah, Fox Brothers.
Okay. Okay. I'm putting it on the list. I tried to thoroughly dissect Texas, Kansas City, Memphis, and a few other locations. I've never even been to North Carolina. I feel like North Carolina keeps coming up as like this place that everybody needs to go. You know what North Carolina feels like to me, particularly Asheville? It feels like it has the same joie de vivre right now that Portland had in, 2010 to 2018.
Portland, whatever it's going through, I have to say and recognize that the bonsai scene in Portland is just inspiring. And so many good things happening there from guys, Andrew Thing, Hagedorn, now there's so much good stuff like it's out of there that it's inspiring to, I think, the rest of the bonsai community in America.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. And I don't think that that has dipped at all. I think if anything, the bonsai scene here has gotten stronger. I mean, Andrew has just come onto the scene with, total professionalism, a focus on broadleaf that nobody's really, pursued to the level and dedication that he's pursuing. Michael will always be an artist to be watched, and his work is so intentional when it's put out there. It's like, it's really a pleasure to get to experience. But, the hub of that is the Pacific Bonsai Museum being right up the road and what Aaron is doing up there and the community around the Pacific Bonsai Museum. I do believe collections form the center for bonsai culture. And listen, Arthur Jura in North Carolina and what's happening there, I really believe that to be a powerful influence on bonsai in that region, and it seems like that's on the up and up too, because you've got Danny Coffey, you got Tyler Sherrod, you've got a number of individuals in that region that are bonsai professionals focusing on doing interesting stuff there. And it's like, wow, okay, all right, Asheville getting going. But like, one thing that makes Portland unique, you've got the Pacific Bonsai Museum up in Federal Way. You've got Austin Heitzman, one of the best woodworkers that's ever, thrown his hat into the ring of bonsai. You've got Michael Hagedorn and Andrew Robson and Matt Reel and, Bobby Curtwright. Now Tokutake is now making things. Jan Rentenauer has been, a prolific ceramicist. But if you go to a BSOP meeting, they've got like 500 or 600 plus members in that club. And every single meeting is like, it's like going to a convention. There's 3 or 4 ceramicists at any BSOP meeting selling, 50 to 100 pots on their stand and their handmade ceramics. And it's just like, wow, it's really, I did a demonstration for them like a month or two ago, and I was just like overwhelmed. I mean, it was, the turnout for a demonstration at BSOP's bigger than most of the largest conventions in North America. It was like a happening, and I was just like, well, geez, this is really quite a pleasure. And I think Andrew Robson, and when you talk about doing a residency, a place where you would do a residency at would be a ceramic facility. Is that what it requires?
Yeah, that's what I've looked into. Big dream is to even do that in Europe and do the trophy at some point.
Yeah. Oof. I love this.
And I've reached out to studios over there and just haven't gotten the feedback that sounded that welcoming to something like that. I think places either want you to be more of a long-term thing or something, just whatever it is, it just haven't landed on the right thing yet.
Well, I mean, when you and I started talking, we had hosted the Triskelly boys, and they had sort of turned Mariah into their artist in residency, and then through East Creek Ceramics and the wood-fired community down there, we were able to fire their work, which was insanely cool. It would be really interesting for you, and I know you've thrown out you and Preston and Rob potentially doing a trio. I like that energy. I think it's really interesting, and I think it would be really pretty kick-ass for you guys to potentially consider that with a robust body of work as a result of that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of possibilities
that
there.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. I remember us talking about that, and it's not something that I remembered that well after all that I've been through, but you bring that back up, and boy, that exciting. Just the idea of just working in studio with you guys was just like the best weekend I could have hoped for. We just all learned from one another, shared information and ideas, and expanded our own. I think we all expanded on it. It was really great.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad these ideas come and go, and I don't want to become affixed to somebody else's idea, but you had me at hello with that one. And so I wanted to bring it back up and just say, hey, remember when we talked about that? That sounded pretty awesome.
Well, we're going to use that said, we're going to figure it out. How about that?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think as Mariah has continued to evolve, it is really special. Both, you know, I think I've started to understand even beyond what I had originally conceptualized how special, you know, the Western United States from the Rockies West is, you know, not more special, but it's special than other regions for the natural beauty. And, you know, ceramics, I continue to go back to something that Lyme Allen said when he started making ceramics, that every time a piece of ceramic is fired, it enters the, what was it, the geological record or something like that. Like it becomes right. a piece of stoneware that now enters this like etched in time existence. And the way that Jonathan Cross, you know, out at his studio in the desert down in outside of Joshua Tree, the way that he handles a lot of his rejected pots is he just takes them and he chucks them out into the desert and sort of, you know, lets them more or less become a part of that ecosystem again. And maybe they get dug up, you know, a decade from now and the wares of time has changed it into something that is no longer a reject, or maybe it's the observation of that or the found moment of that. I don't really know like what, or even if there is an intention to his doing that, but like when the team was down there documenting Jonathan's process, like they took a picture of a pot that was like half buried in the sand out in the desert, and that's what like gave rise to this realization that he's like basically discarding of those things as if they were a rock. And I just thought that was like so that's radical.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yep. Really. It is. You know, grew up in South Georgia on a horse farm with lots of acreage that was fields being plowed and whatnot. We, as young as I can remember, we were walking those fields after the rains looking for arrowheads and tool points and things like that, and finding so many shards of pottery. So there were campsites of Native Americans that were, you know, we were finding artifacts that are 4,000 to 6,000 years old. And, wow. You know, that was in stoneware. There's probably earthenware that they're making because they're just firing things on campfires. We're making the stoneware that might even last longer than that, even if it's just shards. You know, so I always pick up the piece of pottery I'm finding in the field and wonder what the person looked like that had created that. I hope that some of my work stands the test of time for some kid to find one day and wonder what, you know, what did this guy look like or whatever happens, whatever they think. But it's such a cool idea. And I can see that with Jonathan's piece out in the sand. It's got to be amazing. Probably an epic photo.
Yeah, pretty beautiful. I mean, I think everything he makes is beautiful. I think what you're making is super inspiring too, though. I mean, I have never actually utilized, I don't even own a piece of your ceramic work, but I certainly would love to. And knowing now that you're back at full capacity and stuff, I think it's definitely something that I would like to work with you on as far as collaboration and whatnot, because there's such a need, you know, beyond like the thrill of the creativity and artistry. There's just like people are so hungry in North America for ceramics, and this art form is expanding. I mean, bonsai is growing literally and figuratively. It's growing.
It really is. It's in a great way. For a person creating art for the artists, it really is inspiring.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think, you know, when I look at like Japanese bonsai, I don't, because the antique Chinese form, you know, the Tokoname ceramicists sort of went from making like utilitarian ceramic ware to transitioning into the bonsai ceramic and really modeling it after the Chinese ceramic form. But like, I don't know that like Mr. Kimura was changing his composition or his style of bonsai because the ceramic was influencing and inspiring new ways to approach it. But like when I look at what Jonathan Cross has really breathed into, you know, my work and the work that I see people putting in his ceramic, or like Horst Heinzelreiter, or, you know, or, and I would say Tom Benda's work is so, you know, beautiful and elegant, and still houses a tree. It just elevates the quality of that tree, but might not change the form of that tree in the way that a Horst or a Jonathan Cross would. Uh-huh. You know, that capacity to inspire and have the container be such an informant to the form and shape of the tree, that's really unique to Western ceramicists in this current era of exploring the boundaries of bonsai outside of the traditional model. And I see your work having the capacity to creatively inspire in that same fashion. So I'm so happy that you're back on the pipes.
Thanks for sharing that. It's really amazing to hear. And it's funny you say that, because I'm really thinking the kind of thing about that a lot. I've been thinking about how I don't think about that. All I do is sit here and I try to create and I try to make things that make me happy and I try to let the clay be the clay. And that's why commissions can be a difficult thing for me, is that, you know, I start thinking as opposed to feeling. I never say no to a commission, or at least trying it, but I want to put the feeling into it over the thinking. And just, again, let the clay be clay and make something that makes me happy in the process.
Yeah, and it feels like, to me, not being a ceramicist, so take this with a grain of salt, but sometimes I do get commissions, you know, to make trees for people, and all of a sudden that's a different process than like just, you know, sort of making the tree. But it's like there is almost a mastery of craft that comes with being able to turn loose of that pressure and expectation and still find that sort of soulful approach to a commission, as well as just an independent free body of work that you're able to perform without expectation.
Right.
And that almost seems like a muscle that has to be exercised a little bit.
I think you're right. And exercising it is a process. And, you know, more times than not, when you make a commission, you're making three or four, even five pots and hopefully nailing it somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some people are very specific in what they want within, you know, a quarter of an inch, and that's, you know, I've lazily not figured out the shrinkage in the appropriate way to know exactly what's going to happen. I mean, I should have, that is definitely one of Ron Lang's huge strengths, something I should have taken away from that in a big way, but it just not, I guess it's not my learning capacity or something, but I respect it. And it is something that I should get nailed down in the wake of getting commission requests.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. Some of my favorite Ron Lang pots were commissioned pieces that either hit the mark on the nose and people, once they saw it, realized they had made a wrong call, or commissions right, where it was one of the three that he made to satisfy the commission and he had two left over. I mean, some of those were, in my mind, the very best Ron Lang pots that ever happened, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I've experienced something in my own practice, you know, some requesting a pot for a tree that I really loved and respected and made three of them and nailed it on one, and then they died. And it was, you know, I really had hoped to see the pot on the tree, and I really thought it was perfect, but it just didn't come across right to the artist. So that is what it is, you know.
So how do you balance because you mentioned, you know, you've been a long time devoted bonsai practitioner, you know, you had some setbacks dealing with the stuff that the health issues you were dealing with, but you had an awesome repotting season and you're sort of back in the capacity to be doing bonsai. How do you balance doing bonsai on that kind of passionate level with ceramics now? You know, and I think I probably asked you this before, but we're in a different space now.
I think is the answer to that is the word you just said, balance. You know, life best when balanced, and you know, I'm here grinding all day long trying to get enough pots to take on these this little tour I'm doing, and you take a little break here and there to work on your tree, and it really, really creates that balance. You know, reset your head back in the studio and try again and make something else or more things, and I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, balance is not my strong suit. That's why I ask you. And I mean, I don't even try to strike a balance. I go full bore into just straight dedication to the tree. Because if I started doing ceramics and then I started playing with wood, and you know, I already have a hard time like just not handling rocks all day long and focusing on doing bonsai. But I always envy somebody who can distribute the wealth of attention in a proportional, balanced way. I think that's a certain right. personality. So I am slightly envious of your ability to do that.
Well, it just takes a little bit of practice, and now somehow waking up from this fever dream of these tumors that I was in. I think when they took the tumors out, they put something in my brain, which was this tiny little 1-inch long neon sign that said discipline. And when I start struggling with something, that light starts going off in my mind, and I find a way to do something that needs to be done, whether it's related, exercise related, or just getting out of the studio and out in the outside and breathing fresh air for a little while. You know, it goes off. It's kind of a blessing.
Right. And was that something that you had before, or is that something that this experience and this transition that you're in the process of has come from that?
I feel like it's come from that, because I don't really recall ever, you know, practicing discipline ever before. I mean, I've seen examples of it that were inspiring, you know, where I did in 2010 with a band from Japan. I'd never worked like that before. You know, it was a very grueling tour, but it was so rewarding because the dedication and discipline to what they were doing was inspiring to me. And that was, I think, a precursor and a show of something that I needed to look for. And now finally it seems here.
Wow, that's amazing. It reminds me of when we podcasted with Rodney Clemens and he talked about he fell and he hit his head and it like completely transformed certain aspects of his, you know, personality and stuff for what I understood to be the positive, which is like, well, that's a roll of the dice. You know, obviously accidents happen and you can't control the outcome of that. But if you come out of an accident better than you went into it, or you come out of this situation with tools that you didn't have, it is that, you know, there's some silver lining there.
Absolutely. I agree 1,000%. And I think that something that I find from all these things, and there's even a deeper medical history that we talked about. I'm not going to go all the way there, but I've learned that in all of these trials, there is a positive to be found. Even the worst thing, something that seems like the worst thing that could ever happen to you, there is a positive in there to be found. And if you look for it, you'll find it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
And, Eli. And you capitalize on it when you find it.
Yeah. Yeah. So needless to say, I'm assuming, you know, your family and the people around you are probably over the moon about where you're at and what's going on. Not only from a relief and love of you, but also just seeing you free again to be yourself for the first time in a long time.
The show of support has been adding to the humility in such a great and profound way. You know, I can't be thankful enough for the people who supported me through all this stuff. It's really been amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tremendous, tremendous. Well, I was so happy when you reached back out, and you know, I read what you had written and had a limited knowledge of it, but super happy that we got to sit down and talk today. And I really am excited to see what comes from where you're at and where you're headed. I hope that the trifecta trip goes well for you. I hope that St. Louis and Grand Rapids don't get access to your work because Texas goes so well, but I have no doubt that that trip is going to be very, very successful for you.
Yeah, I'm looking very forward to it, and I hope to see a lot of friends and meet some new ones. It'll be good.
That's great. And just don't forget to water the seed of the artist retreat at Mirai, because we'll take you on some special trips and hopefully forever change your ceramic process in the experiences that we have in the wild together. So something to think about. You know, you and Preston and Rob get together, figure out how you slow Preston down from building kilns and get Rob ready to go. But it would be really fun to have you guys out and to see what that experience could become. So something that we should talk about more if it's of interest to you guys.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah,
absolutely. We'll figure it out.
Well, Eli, I wish you all the best in your continued recovery, and it really is exciting to hear how life has thrown you a curveball and you've turned lemons into lemonade. But stay in touch with us, and good luck with everything, and let's keep evolving the ideas.
Will do, Ryan. Thanks so much for having me today. It's been great. Hope to see everybody out in Houston and St. Louis and Grand Rapids.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Take care, Eli. Thanks so much, man.
All right. Bye.
Bye.